This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Wes, we let off the show today talking about it's a big weekend for some ACC alums as they go into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And our next guest, you go way back with, because one of those gentlemen that will be enshrined is this guy, Calvin Johnson. Turned out to be a pretty good player. Guy was an all-world player at Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
And again, only 35 years of age, and just an incredible player, like they all are. But our next guest, though, is Coach Chan Gailey, who joins us for the first time, and we're going to have a good time with Coach here. Let's bring him on. There he is, front and center. First of all, Coach, welcome to the show. And I know you and Wes go way, way back. There's no telling what kind of stories we're going to get into here in the next 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah. We're going to leave kind of those off to the side so we can talk about Calvin. That's not what we're not here to talk about, Wes and I.
It's a good idea.
Hey, we were just talking during the break. I mean, Calvin Johnson goes to the Hall of Fame. He's the third Georgia Tech player to go into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Billy Shaw, of course, who's from Gainesville, Georgia, the great Indian Joe Guyon from the early 1900s who played football for Heisman at Georgia Tech. But what was it about Calvin Johnson, Chan? And you've coached Hall of Famers. I mean, you had Michael Irvin. You've had guys in Pittsburgh and other guys all over the league. I mean, you've seen Hall of Famers. What was it about this kid? Did you know then? Because he was spectacular in 3 years in Atlanta.
You know, you thought you had a chance to know that he could do that. But the first day he walked on campus, he was so much better than the other guys. So when you have those other guys that you have coached through the years and you look at him, you say he should be. Now, whether or not he is or not, time will tell, injuries will tell, all that kind of stuff. But he was a special, special breed. For us, and it doesn't surprise you, it doesn't surprise me. We didn't know he would be, but it doesn't surprise any of us that he is a Hall of Famer.
Coach, you know, you always hear, regardless of sport, man, my best player is my best worker. How would you categorize Calvin Johnson as far as work ethic, away from the field, study, eating habits, discipline, all of that stuff? We know he turned out to be a great player, but what was the makeup of the DNA that just separated him from everybody else?
Well, he had great parents. When we were recruiting him, we knew what we were getting. We knew the type of person we were getting, the work ethic, the ability to stay focused, to handle himself correctly. And I tell people all the time, that I was fortunate to coach Calvin Johnson because he was an unbelievable player and he was a better person than he was a player. So that tells you a little bit about the guy. He could do it. He did it all the right way. And that's about all you can ask from a player.
Chan, I've always told people he had that drive. It's the first time I saw it really at the – in major college football. I've seen it two times in the NFL with guys who have that innate gear where they come on the field, like he would come on the field for practice at 4 o'clock and wanted to be better by something at six. He wasn't sure what it was going to be, but he had a mission to get better every day. And I thought that not only separated him, but it also helped everybody that played with him who he made better players.
Oh, it challenged everybody, Wes. It did. It challenged. Now, he wasn't a rah-rah, let's go. He wasn't that kind of guy. But he challenged, but with his work ethic and with his expectations of himself, he challenged everybody to get better on the field each day. And the other thing is, there's a difference in hoping to win and expecting to win, and he expected to win. He expected to be successful, and we won some games in the fourth quarter because of that expectations of his, because he brought everybody up to that level.
Coach, you mentioned that you knew he was your best player when you saw him on campus. How about the first time you saw him in high school? What was the immediate reaction?
Well, I said, "This, you're not bringing me a guy from high school here. Who is this you're bringing me? You know, there was this, you know, was this Michael Irvin when he was, it wasn't a current guy. It was somebody from before, you know." And then the next thing I said, "You mean we got a chance to get this guy?" But it was exciting to be involved with the process. He was, his family is a wonderful family. You know, they're so strong. And it was just, it was amazing to see him. It was like a 10th grader playing out there with 6th graders. That's not fair to those guys he was playing against to say that, because I'm sure there were some good players. But if you go to a 10th grade, if you put a 10th grader out there with 6th graders playing, that's what it would look like.
You and I used to have fun as he got into his junior year about the way teams would try to defend him. I mean, this is a guy who the first play of his freshman year, you threw the ball to. I mean, y'all had a play designed and he caught a pass on his first snap as a freshman. By the time he has reached his junior year, Pack, Chan called me to the office one day and he said, "You know how we've talked about two guys on Calvin on every snap?" He said, "I want you to come up here and watch this clip." And Georgia Tech had played Saturday night at NC State. And Chan, you remember how many guys they put on him on that route? They put three guys on him, right? They lowered him and then
bracketed him behind him, bumped him and bracketed him behind him. But they may have run a linebacker out there too, you know. It was amazing.
But the end game of the story is, Pack, James Johnson was wide open on the other side of the field, and that's who Reggie Ball threw it to.
Yeah, that's right. But we told Reggie, "Hey, there's got to be three. If there's just two, he's open. Calvin's still open if there's just two."
But with three, everybody's open out there. You know, you mentioned NC State, and there's so many highlights with Calvin. But, you know, every time I see the highlight in Raleigh where he just basically contorts his entire body and just somehow, I don't even know how he did it, catches the ball in the middle of the field. You can watch that highlight on a loop and just go, for crying out loud, it's not even physically possible to catch the football the way he did. Unbelievable.
What'd you say to announce that, Wes? What did you say? What did you call that, the Spider-Man? Was that you that called it the Spider-Man catch?
No, that was that's Doc Walker gets credit for the Spider-Man. I couldn't believe it. It took my breath away when he caught it, because I didn't, you know, where we were in Raleigh, I thought he caught it, but I wasn't positive he caught it. And you know, the one I get asked about all, and you know this too, because we talk, the one I get asked about all the time is his first college road game. Packer doesn't like to talk much about the Clemson game, Chan, in 04. But that's the one, that catch in the corner is the most, I mean, to me, that game and his three touchdowns in his first college road game, I mean, that's bananas.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I live up here in northeast Georgia now, about 45 miles from Clemson, and there's people that still are – hating that game and probably did not vote for Calvin.
Well, let's be realistic. You had no business winning the game, but that catch by Calvin was like, hey, he just made a play. But the NC State catch to me was the one you just go, oh my goodness, how in the world does a man make a play like that? I mean, that one, even to this day, you watch it and you just shake your head and go, unbelievable, incredible.
Well, Pack, the thing about it is he'd make one of those a day in practice. So nobody in our group was, you know, kind of really shocked, because we saw that all the time. And so it was amazing. It was a lot of fun.
Let me ask you about, and comparisons are dangerous, and I understand that. But as I said at the top, you've been around guys who are Hall of Famers at wide receiver. Michael Irvin in Dallas, probably the, you know, the one most notable in your glossary of football coaching. This guy separated himself and did not have a storybook championship type career. But the fact that he's a first ballot guy, Coach, shows me that everybody knew how good he was at the highest level the game is played.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, you had to know where he was going to line up every time. There was nobody else that created that angst on the defense like Calvin did. You couldn't, it's not like you could go out there and try to disguise it, because if you try to run somebody over late, it could be too late. You know, you can't run them over there late. You better go over there and line up. And so it was, everybody recognized it. You're right. The league, the players, everybody involved closely with the game realized how amazing Calvin was.
Coach, I'm going to switch gears on you before we let you go. Your take on Georgia Tech. We had Jeff Collins on the show yesterday. Practice starts today. What direction the Jackets are headed moving forward? What do you think?
Well, you hope great. You know, I know I got a couple of former players that are coaching down there, great guys, and I know the enthusiasm everybody has for the program. So you hope they do well. If I knew about predictions and how to do those kind of things, I'd be sitting where you guys are instead of sitting at home. So I'm not very good at predictions.
Coach, that makes three of us, because all three of us right here's now are sitting at home.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, here's my – look, let's get a little plug in here. I see the hat, the Habersham Raiders. I know you're still tied to the game because you love the game. Tell me about the Habersham Raiders. Have we got a scrimmage tonight of some sort? It's a Friday night in Northeast Georgia. I got to believe somebody's scrimmaging, doing something.
Oh, we got a big scrimmage tonight. First game of the year, so to speak. But and I'm driving out of town, headed to Canton. I don't know what's wrong with me. But I have a son that coaches there. I got a grandson that plays there. My other son is the head of the booster club, so – we're very involved with the local high school, and we're excited about the season and excited about all the sports there. They do such a great job. They've got Jeep Cunningham's AD here and just does an amazing job. Great guy.
That's awesome. Well, it's great to see you. Best to Laurie. Tell Andrew and Tate hello. And we'll put a peg in the ground next spring, I promise. We'll put a peg in the ground, my man.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah. We'll get to it.
Yeah.
Chan, thanks. Great to see you.
Good to see you guys. Take care.
Be good, Coach.
All right. Chan Gailey, Coach Calvin Johnson from 2004 to 2006. Best year yet, defensive backs coming up. On Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Durham on a Friday morning. Many thanks to the coach, Chan Gailey. Looks like he's loving life. And anybody that's sitting there eating old hot dog buns with some jelly on it's a friend of mine. I can just say that right now. He's living my kind of life.
Did you... before you got into being a broadcasting and marketing executive,
yes,
and legendary radio talk show host,
that too.
Do you go to high school football? Did you go to high school football when the girls were in school? Did you go to Myers Park games? They went to Myers Park, right?
Yeah, we lived at the time, which is about, I don't know, half a mile from where I am right now. We could sit literally on the front porch and listen to the band playing. I mean, it was an easy walk to the games. So we would literally take the girls, we would walk on a Friday night, do a little high school action. And this even before they were in high school. I mean, it was just a cool thing to do. It was fun. Easy.
How good is going to a high school football game, man? It's just like the purest form of the deal, isn't it? I mean, it's awesome going to college and NFL and things like that. High school football is its own, and especially in small towns. I love to try and go to games here in Cartersville when we get a chance. I just think it's awesome. I love high school football. I think it's just a unique, unique American experience.
Yeah, I mean, $5 to get in, a couple bucks for a hot dog, you get your Coca-Cola, you just put your feet back and just watch America, quite frankly. And I'm with you on that. It's and there's always a trickle-down effect, right? Whatever happens in the NFL, college ends up stealing that. Eventually, high school steal from college, et cetera, et cetera. But as far as just, you know, like I said, you mentioned what's it like. When you hear the sound of a high school band on a crisp autumn night on a Friday, and you're just like, man, let's just go and have fun. And it's, I'm with you 100% with that. There is a purity to it, no doubt.
Yeah. Thanks to Chan Gailey, and good luck to those Habersham Raiders, right? Let's get back to best year yet. And this is an interesting category in defensive backs, because you got one guy who didn't play at all last year who's on this list, a guy who was supposed to be a senior in high school last year who was supposed to be a freshman in college this year on the list. You got a singular playmaker on this list, a guy who is a highlight waiting to happen, and another guy who transferred from Liberty on this list. Let's start with Jermaine Waller, who did not play a year ago, Virginia Tech, but is expected to come back and be a key piece in what the Hokies do this year. He was the other side of Caleb Farley 2 years ago. You saw the three picks, the 10 deflections, and the nearly 50 stops. I mean, he's a playmaker, bottom line. And I'm really excited to see what he's got on opening night against the new guys, Carolina, Choffrey Brown, Josh Downs, those guys that Mack Brown and Phil Longo will throw out there, Mark.
Yeah, he's going to have a big year. There's no question about that for Virginia Tech to get things off to a good start and have a big-time season. But it's going to be cool to see him back on the field. And, you know, and some of these guys, again, it's not just necessarily this category, that we did not see play last year have chances to maybe be the best in this league in that particular department. I use a guy like Justin Ross at Clemson at wide receiver. Same deal with here with Waller. I mean, this is a guy that can play for anybody in the country. And hopefully he's at 100% ready to go.
Yep. Tony Grimes is next, and this is the guy that should be a freshman this year. But when the Commonwealth of Virginia decided not to play high school football a year ago, he enrolled early at Chapel Hill, got on the field, and had an impact, including this amazing pick against Miami, and played well in the Orange Bowl. The production level, I mean, they were smart. I give Jay Bateman and Dre Bly a lot of credit here. They took their time with Tony Grimes. It wasn't just go heave him into the deep end of the pool. They let the maturity level, the maturity curve be taken, if you will. And I think there's a big payoff for Carolina with this kid.
You know, here's the other thing too. A lot of times you get these five-star guys coming out of high school, the next big thing. You know, again, you and I are not recruiting guys, but you hear it all the time. And sometimes you finally see them on the field and they're, you know, hey, they're freshmen. You know, it's going to take a while. This guy looked like he looks like he'd been in North Carolina already 3 years, right? He just seems like the game is slow around him. And those are the guys that become stars. And he's got the chance, I think, if he continues to work hard, develop, and everything else, to be one of those dudes that lives up to the hype coming out of high school.
The highlight waiting to happen is at Clemson. He's already got about a dozen of them. Ladies and gentlemen, Andrew Booth is on this list. I mean, back? What are you going to say, right?
Well, I mean, how many times did he win wide receiver?
Let's just roll the video.
How many times did he win wide receiver U last year? You heard us, wide receiver U. I mean, he just made crazy plays, including this one against Virginia, which started it all. Good grief.
Mm-hmm. He had one in the spring game, for heaven's sakes.
I know, he did.
So Andrew Booth's clearly on the list. Yeah. A guy who coaches will tell you about and now has started to pick up some of the notoriety beyond the walls of coaches' rooms is Keytrell Clark of Louisville. The transfer from Liberty went in there a year ago, and over the course of the season was a pretty bright spot, to be honest with you, and otherwise pretty inconsistent defensive backs. And I think Terrell Clark's a guy who a lot of people are excited about.
100% agree. And it also tells you, man, you know what? They got a bunch of good players up there at Liberty, don't they? It's just amazing. I mean, Hugh Freeze has done a nice job, but, man, you got guys even transferring out of there that show up at other locations and say, guess what? I can ball. And Clark can absolutely do that.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to the kind of guys in the middle of the field here. Bubba Bolden. I mean, come on. The guy's on the Thorpe list. I mean, this is a football player. And there's the whole package is right here, Mark, for Bubba Bolden.
Two words. Sunday dude. That's what he is. Bubba Bolden, you will see on Sundays. He is all over the place, man. I'm telling you, you watch the Canes play, 21's a problem. Really a problem.
Yep. I don't know. I mean, maybe you have more interceptions, but the tackle TFL number is pretty strong. You get your best year yet, and that's what we call these segments. Best year yet, if he has those kind of numbers and adds two or three interceptions to it, he's going to be going places in December to pick up trophies.
Yep.
And they have a good year, no question. Back for his 10th year at Clemson is Nolan. Back.
Yeah, he and Skowski, they were there during the Danny Ford era, and here they are going to conclude their careers, I think, this year. Yeah, but Nolan Turner's been there for 100 years, mm-hmm. It just seems like. And you know, ever since he had the huge pick against Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl a couple years ago, people paid attention to 24, and he's just one of these guys that, you know what, just makes plays. 24 is all over the place.
Yep. Yep, he is he is a football player, and that we joke about the age and the experience level, but it is real for Clemson with Nolan Turner. I'm kind of excited to see Landon Zanders comes back in that secondary, Nolan Turner, James Skowski. There's a lot of experience. You got Booth, a playmaker on one side. Going to be really, really interesting to watch Clemson because the front is lights out, as you'll see coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Joey Blunt of Virginia, when healthy, is tremendous. Injuries, though, have kind of derailed him a little bit. 2 years ago, you see the numbers. And then last year in four games, 25 tackles, an interception, and a forced fumble. I mean, an impact player for sure for Bronco Mendenhall.
Without a doubt. But I think as a group, Wes, this is the area Virginia is really going to have to improve in the secondary. Now, Joey's a big-time player. Mm-hmm. But he's also going to need some help back there. That, yep. To me, if Virginia, we talked about them earlier today, being able to win on the road is certainly going to be critical. But their secondary is going to have to improve from a year ago.
Yeah. Another guy that's made a lot of list on this is Nick Anderson of Wake Forest. Now, in part because he became the National Defensive Player of the Week when he had three interceptions against Virginia Tech. However, you string Anderson's rest of his body of work, you do see tackling production the rest of the year, and that's got to be encouraging to Lyle Hempel in the Wake secondary.
He's also a great story, right? We were just sitting here talking about Tony Grimes, five-star mm-hmm, guy and all yep. that stuff. The Nick Anderson story is also what makes college football so special, about how in the world does a guy like that get in a position, and when yep. he does, takes over. I mean, it's just a feel-good story, and he's a really, really good player.
And going to be a critical piece to where Wake Forest goes here. Offensively, you know they got starters back. Anderson's got to be one of the key factors. And remember, as Pac said, walk-on who emerged. But Wake had a lot of young guys that because of injury and things like that had to be put back in tough spots last year. And the Deacs lived to tell about it. That is a clear advantage as they go to camp as well this week along the way. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour – we've carved out, 20 minutes or so for the defensive linemen. And I mean, there are 10 guys on this list, Mark. 10.
Yeah, which I believe
this is where the money's going to get made in the ACC this year, isn't it?
And I believe it's the entire Clemson defensive line you will hear from at some point in time, because they may be as nasty as they were in 2018. And that group, as you well know, destroyed Alabama and everything else in its wake on its way to a national championship. They are that talented up front down there in Tigertown. But there's a bunch of them in this league, and we'll address all of them coming up next hour.
Yeah. Next on the show, a long time guest on this show makes an appearance for the first time in a long time. We've not had Brian Ives on this show in months, maybe years. And we've only been on a couple. Sit tight. Brian Ives on the road in Chapel Hill. Fresh off a big blue bucket, and he's not here. Next on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham right here on ACC Network. I'm going to bring back a old member of the band who's part of the ACC tour. He's been partying like a rock star since this thing got started.
Yeah.
Anything involving Tobacco Road, you know Brian Ives is going to be right there in the middle of it.
My swollen eyes look like I have been partying, but I swear I just woke up.
Yeah, so okay.
My fault. Right.
We got it. I'm just glad you made it in time for the 8:30 appearance.
All right. Let me I want to get the rundown here of the ACC road trip, the non-televised portion of the program. Dave Parker, our buddy at Amedeo's, took care of you guys the other night. Am I guessing? I heard that Dave took care of everybody at Amedeo's, Hillsborough Street in Raleigh. You guys took okay there, right?
Yeah, that was great. I'd never been there. If you are a State fan, you need to go there. The memorabilia and the stuff on the walls there is unbelievable. And so we had the hookup there. Thanks, Eric McLean, you know, friend of the program. So he got the hookup there at State, and that was great. I mean, lasagna, chicken parm, can't go wrong.
How'd you do last night?
So last night we tried to pull some strings and get into a certain steakhouse in the Triangle. That didn't work. So we went up top of the hill. We were going to go Tuesday, but it's closed on Tuesdays. That was a rookie mistake on my part. I forgot that it's closed on Tuesdays and tried to bring everyone there. But we went up there yesterday. Saw Bubba Cunningham. He was there. Said hello to him. So just had to bring folks who'd never been to Chapel Hill. Had to bring them to more of a classic staple there.
Sounds like
Did you go to He's Not last night?
I didn't go to He's Not. I can't speak for others in my traveling party, though. You know, some of them, you know, just sort of, you know,
nice.
Sneak away. You know, won't name names.
Well, that's probably a good idea on network television. Just say, I mean, we're trying to get the tour to every ACC location in one piece. So, you know, I know we started on Tobacco Road where the company has spent upwards to, I don't know, $7 to $8 on gas to knock out these first three. So let's just make sure we can get through all 14 schools in one piece. That's the deal here. We're in Chapel Hill. It's all about North Carolina, though, tonight.
Well, I got Louisville next week, Pack, and there's a little more potent drinks in that town. So we'll see about that.
It's what I hear.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to be in Raleigh in September. That's all we know. Okay. What do you think we'll learn today at Chapel Hill, Brian, about Carolina with the expectation level and all the things that kind of go with this? I mean, there is a lot, and we were talking about it in hour one, there's a lot hinging on opening night in Blacksburg for Mack Brown and Phil Longo.
Yeah, that opening game for Carolina is huge. It's huge for Virginia Tech. It can completely change the trajectory of their season, too. But for Carolina, what I'm looking for is everyone's going to talk about the offense. Everyone's going to talk about replacing his weapons. Eric McLean brought up a good point. He's going to talk about it tonight. Can their defense win them games when their offense might have a slightly off night? Can Carolina's defense win them games? They've recruited really well on the defensive side, especially up front, and a couple guys in the secondary. They're still young. But I think that's the question that I would like to see. I'm excited to see that defense, see how much they've grown in the past year. I think it was huge for them that Tamon Fox came back. People don't realize he's close to top five or in the top five in Carolina in sacks all time. So I think he's a great veteran presence to have there along that defensive line with some young, very talented guys like Desmond Evans. They got some big recruits there. That's the question I'm interested in seeing, because I think most people know the offense should be pretty good. So the defense is really the – can they take that next step?
You know, Brian, this is why I think North Carolina is such a fascinating case study. Nobody's questioning talent, right? There used to be a time where, well, and they just – he's only the guys. That's not the case. Mac Brown's done a really great job in a short period of time from a recruiting perspective. His staff's done a terrific job developing guys. So you know you got dudes on the offense. You know you got dudes on the defense. I think it's the mental aspect for North Carolina. Are you comfortable now all of a sudden in this zone where people expect you to be really, really good? You know, you can beat somebody offensively. You can beat somebody on the defensive side. I mean, that's when you become a complete team. Watching North Carolina handle success, to me, will be the most interesting part of their 21 season. And it starts the very first time they go into football field, because people expect North Carolina to be that kind of team.
I totally agree. And that's a unique spot for Carolina football. You can count on probably two hands the seasons where they've been the hunted and not the hunter in a conference. Past 2 years, it's been like, all right, Mac Brown's got the program going. They're improving great. Now, you know, the expectations are here. Now you're going into Lane Stadium where everyone knows you have the target on the back. You're not trying to be the upstart team that can pull a cool win in front of a bunch of rowdy fans, and they will be rowdy in Lane Stadium, which Carolina hasn't seen in what, you know, well over a year. Sam Howell hasn't seen since he was a freshman. So that first game, there's a ton of obviously super, super big first games in the ACC week one. Obviously, Clemson, Georgia has national implications, but even if one of them loses, they can still be all right. North Carolina, Virginia Tech, if North Carolina loses, you know, you're behind the eight ball pretty quickly. So I think in terms of impact and importance, you can argue that is the most important game in week one in the ACC.
Brian, you guys have in stops with NC State and Duke, you guys have been able to, you know, kind of put players in a unique position where they find out they know each other pretty well, that kind of thing. At Carolina, it's been a little more newsmaking from the player perspective. I mean, Jeremiah Gimmel came out and talked about the playoff expansion, things like that. You expect we get some more insight on those type things in the show tonight?
That's a good question. So we're going to have Sam on the show, Coach Brown on the show, Jeremiah and Jordan Tucker. They're going to lead us on a tour of the facilities. Mm-hmm. I know everyone loves the Jordan stuff. So we'll see all that and all the weight room and nutrition station, which I should probably spend some time at. So I don't know. I mean, we're going to try to – we really want to have fun and get these guys' personalities like we have in the first two, you know, open up a little bit. But obviously, Mac made some news yesterday. He had some comments about expansion and sort of how Carolina needs to be ready. And he's talked to Bubba Cunningham. If they don't talk about that, fine. But I think this is more, we just want to have fun and showcase the program and sort of, you know, get these personalities out of these guys. Because, you know, it's always fun to talk to them where they're comfortable. You go to media days, they're kind of sort of buttoned up, looking around, not, you know, trying to be on their best behavior. Here, they're more comfortable and relaxed. So, it's always fun to come to them to see what they'll say.
Brian, it's been since 1980, since North Carolina last won an ACC football championship. I get the sense, at least here in early August, that this has to be the year. Now, I know Mac's going to continue to recruit well. North Carolina football is in really good shape. But when you've got number seven under center, when you start saying, hey, we're a championship team, you have to have that guy. North Carolina's got that guy. Now, what happens next year? You got to figure Sam Howell's in the NFL. Do you get a sense that it just feels like, hey, if it's going to happen, man, this is the year it's going to happen?
Yeah, I think so. It was so weird because you've talked to people over the past 2 or 3 years like, oh, this team by 2022, they're going to be rolling. I'm like, yeah, they could be. I mean, they're arguably going to be a better defense, might have better skill players. But like you said, quarterback is the position. You know, Drake May or Jacoby Criswell could be great. But you can't assume someone is going to be Sam Howell. You can't assume you're going to have the best quarterback in the history of your program playing, which Carolina, I would argue, has right now. So you have to take advantage of it. Whether your defense is young, they're still talented, whether you're breaking in new pieces on the outside and the running back, it doesn't matter. You have the best quarterback, arguably, in program history. You have to take advantage. And 1980, actually the last time I think Carolina had a player of the year, ACC player of the year. So, you know, it's been a minute for both of those.
Well, and the other aspect about this is that's where we keep talking about the offensive side, and rightly so, 10 starters back. Defensively is where this thing has to turn, though, guys. I mean, we can talk all we want about Sam Howell. They're going to score points. We understand that. I mean, not that it's plug and play on the perimeter at running back, but you like Ty Chandler, you like Choffrey Brown, Josh Downs, some of the kids they brought into that program. Bo Corrales is one of those guys, seemingly has been there 10 years, two-pack. The idea, though, where Carolina, I think, stops and starts this football season is on the defensive side. And if they can be consistent defensively, make plays, I don't see a reason they can't be in the mix.
Yeah, I thought the Orange Bowl was a pretty good preview because Chasserat opted out. So they return all 11 starters on defense from the Orange Bowl. And they had their moments. They started pretty well. They were holding A&M in check, and you could tell they kind of wore down. The A&M busted a couple big runs at the end. But they add these type talent like Keyshawn Silver and Ra-Ra Dilworth, which, you know, you hope they're ready, but at the least they provide some depth to a defense that hopefully if they wear down throughout the game, these guys can come in and sort of spell them a little bit. But I think I would completely agree, Pac, and especially up front. They need to pressure the quarterback, which they didn't do a great job of last year, and stop the run. I mean, it sounds easy, but I think up front.
And Brian, I think the other thing too is we'll find out about the maturity level of this team, given the fact that last year, you know, at Virginia, didn't get the job done. At Florida State, sound asleep in the first half, cost you a ball game. You know, if you're going to get to that next step, that's why I keep going back to the pressure of handling the fact that people expect you to be good. Those weekends can't happen. You can't have we just threw away 30 minutes and now next thing you know, we're down 3 touchdowns and we're playing catch up all day and we lose. That can't happen if you're going to be a championship team. So we'll see how they handle, you know, the setbacks from last year, especially those games on the road. You know what? Hey, that can't happen if we're going to go ahead and win an ACC championship.
And that Florida State game was the first game after they got ranked in the top 5 or whatever it was, since the first time since Mac's first stint. So right away they got that number by their name and those expectations, and they went LL Florida State, Virginia. Now they did a good job coming back in those games, but that's to your point.
All right, Brian Ives, ACC Network producer extraordinaire, Carolina grad, Charlotte native, Panthers fan, Hornets fan. What's that about? What do you mean? We're just giving people your dossier.
Pac's a big Hornets fan too, so
I am.
He and I can discuss the free agent signings off air.
I
don't need to bore with Pac.
Listen, I said the other day on the air, A+ on the draft, Jordan Kupchak, they were fantastic. Incredible draft. Incredible
there
draft.
There we go. I like it. I like it. Optimism. Yeah. That's what we like.
So all right. So we appreciate you joining us. We know that based on the Duke show last night that Cotter and McLean could not be with us because they're getting a lift in. And
I appreciate
you taking time and carving it out of your schedule. Well, I know I'm right.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
All right. See you soon. Tell Bennett hello.
No.
Do it. Brian Ives, ACC Road Trip, is tonight in Chapel Hill, Mark, 7:00, right here on ACC Network. Jeremiah Gimmel, Sam Howell, and more. Mac Brown for a long visit. All that comes up tonight from Chapel Hill. Pretty excited about it. These shows give you real inside looks and practice video from that day and that type deal. And heck, we're only 3 of 14 in, Mark, and it goes all the way to August 27th. When we wrap it up with the Clemson Tigers. But tonight, 7:00, right over there in Chapel Hill. It takes us to the weekend. We'll have another one for you on Monday night, right here on ACC Network. All right, sit tight. When we come back, in case you missed it, yesterday, speaking of the road trip to Durham, we'll check in on the Blue Devils, their first day, Gunnar Holmberg and more, and David Cutcliffe with Chris Cotter and Eric McClain. Look, Coach Cut in a tower. We'll get to that next on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham right here on ACC Network. Many thanks to Brian Ives who just joined us from Chapel Hill. As you well know, the tour is at UNC tonight. The tour yesterday, though, Wes, some 8 miles down the road there, Duke University, Wallace Wade Outdoor Stadium.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Chris Cotter, Eric McClain on site. They chatted with David Cutcliffe and started the visit with the reality that Gunnar Holmberg becomes the fourth quarterback in the last four seasons for the Blue Devils.
It's different than anything I've ever done in my career, not done by plan.
Yeah.
But it's okay. I think maybe when I prepare for other teams, if you don't have last year's tape to study early in the season, that's always bothersome. So I'm excited for Gunnar and let's go and see what happens.
Yeah, no question about it. Coach, you had your first day of practice today. We obviously were out there, got to see it, and guys were flying around excited. What were some things? I know you just reviewed the tape and broke it all down. Is that what you expect to see day one? Where is it all good and happy things?
Well, it's not all good. And I think y'all heard me to know it's not all happy things.
I got to ask you about that after this answer.
Okay, but What I do like about this team, it was not a matter of lack of interest, enthusiasm, effort. I'd like to see us focus wire to wire a little better. I would like to see a little less anxiety. And I know we got a very young football team, but I want them focused on having fun, a little bit more fun on the field than what I saw today.
No question about it. So you alluded to it a little bit. We saw you out there on a tower with the air horn, the megaphone there. And I love it because you can see everything. You know, especially as a head coach, you have to use your time appropriately and go to the various things. On that, you can see everything and talk to everybody at once.
It really is something. I'll go back to Coach Bryant. And I asked him one time why the tower, and he's right. You think of things, you may see a position change up there that otherwise you wouldn't. You certainly can have input at every aspect that you're responsible for. Don James, of all people, who was the coach at Washington, I had long conversations with Coach James about what to do in the tower. Coach Bowden actually let me, I was buddies with all the assistants, and I'd known Coach Bowden. He let me go up in the tower with him. All the assistants were mad at me. What are you telling him up there, you know? But I just like that. I love the game of football. I love special teams. I love defense, and certainly spent my career loving offense. And I wouldn't want to really do it any other way. And that's a brand new tower, and I like where it is because I can get down quickly. I may get a sliding board, guys. Boom, you know, and I'm
that's
there.
Right. That's
and,
right.
And then the climbing's good for me, too. So okay. Here we go.
As early as you started today, you might have needed a flashlight to get up there on top of that tower. Talking to some of your players today, they were like, 4 o'clock wake-up call. Is this going to be a thing of the norm here in the summer?
You know what? No, but it's old school, which is good for them. I mean, it's a reminder there are no more two-a-days.
That's right.
But we can still get you up early.
That's right.
And that was the norm when you were trying to, you know, start practice at 7, 7:30, knowing you were going to have another practice at 3:30 in the afternoon. So a little taste of that,
yeah,
not bad for them.
I don't know whether this was your plan or not earlier in the summer, Coach, but social media got an eyeful of Coach lifting weights and working out. Can we show that to everybody, the three or four people out there who didn't see it?
Look at
there
that.
He is in the middle.
Look at the pec development, the abs.
Right. McClain, it was hard to identify you among the others.
Yeah, well, it doesn't take long to find Waldo in that picture.
That's right. That's right.
Not at all. We can find Waldo there. We know who doesn't fit in.
No, I don't agree. Well, so what inspired this? I mean, did you just get done repping out two?
It was them.
25? They told you to do it.
Yeah, I'm down there, and they start hollering, you know, hey, come on, let's get a picture, take your shirt off. And I forget there's cameras.
Everybody
I'm having
now.
Fun with
right.
the players,
right.
and as long as there's a cell phone,
right.
there's
yeah.
a camera,
that's right.
and I just got caught.
Well, Coach,
line.
You look fantastic, so
well,
I don't think
you
need to regret it at all, and I mean, if you want to do it right, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
No need with you two here.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it. We'll find Waldo again.
Later
I get
that's
it. Right. I don't want to be Waldo but one time.
You know, so you were working out over the summer, but you were also a trapper, if you will. We got some video of you in one of your facilities here. Well, I guess the players were dancing, and you show up. What do you got in your hands here?
Well, it's a North Carolina black rat snake. But there was actually a purpose. So this guy is where he's not supposed to be, right by our indoor, and people are freaking out. I grew up catching snakes, and yeah, they don't bother me. I had a lot of them around us in Alabama. And I told y'all, we had a deal that I saw some food left on the floor in our visitor's locker room, which I don't like. I mean, it irritated me, and I had ripped them the day before. If you leave food out, guess what? You get rats and mice, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
If you get rats and mice, guess what you get? You get snakes a rat snake.
Yeah.
And so I was showing them, if y'all want this guy around, keep putting food on the ground, okay? And I can turn him loose. No, that's okay. So
right, good lesson.
Always coaching. Right. Always coaching.
It's a good point.
That's right. That's right.
Keep those snakes away from me. I'm going to call cut. Next time Kershaw shows up back here in the backyard, I'm calling cut.
Apparently, he's got no problem going down there and just grabbing them, right? What is that?
I don't know.
Holy smokes.
I think Coach
9 o'clock hour coming up.
Coach does look great, though. I mean, good for him. So good to see David Cutcliffe having a good time coaching him up. And can we listen? There's nothing but optimism for everybody in early August, right? Everybody's excited to get back to football and so forth. So hopefully good things happen at Duke University. Again, got the schedule the way it works out. Bunch of non-conference games early. Chance for Duke to get off to a good start.
Yeah, Blue Devils in primetime in week two, by the way. The home opener at Wallace Wade Stadium against the Aggies of North Carolina A&T. So looking forward for the coverage there as well from Duke that weekend. More to come in the 9 o'clock hour, another best and worst case scenario. Remember, we got a handful of schools left to go there. We'll do a best year yet as it relates to defensive linemen and more. Plus other fun stuff on the way to the weekend. Sit tight. Packer and Durham's Power Hour coming up next on ACC
Network. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.